Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
Monday.
It is 2/22/2016, February 22nd, and welcome to the Rebel Rise Live podcast. I'm David Johnson, along with your co-hosts Dave Bevan and Michael Quirk, and we all hope your week is getting off to a fantastic start. Let's not beat around the bush, so to speak, but it kind of felt like you might have been at Old Bush Stadium over the weekend, particularly Sunday afternoon at Swayze Field, when Ken Overtfeld, Tom Herr, Daryl Porter, Keith Hernandez, George Hendrick, all the 1980 St. Louis Cardinals looked like they took the field at Swayze, Michael, with these new powder blue Ole Miss baseball uniforms. I love those things. How did they go over with the fans at Swayze on Sunday?
It seemed like they were a hit. To me personally, I was just waiting for Jackie Moon to trot onto the field, as it looked like an ABA's type of uniform for me. I wasn't the biggest fan. I spoke with Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball, who tweeted that they were Columbia Blue, referencing Houston Oilers, and he caught some flack on Twitter for some Ole Miss faithful.
Yeah, I noticed Rogers was on Twitter this morning, and apparently as great of a place as Swayze is to play baseball, and Kendall Rogers had no problem with the atmosphere. I think he was very complimentary of the atmosphere this morning on Twitter, but he did say from a facilities amenities standpoint, Swayze was lacking compared to other places in the SEC. I thought that was a little bit surprising, as I think most in the Ole Miss Nation feel as if they have one of the country's top baseball facilities. But just like in football, if you're sitting still, you're getting left behind. And I think that's why you saw Ole Miss make the announcement last week that upgrades and amenities and renovations were coming to Swayze. But I thought that was interesting, Michael, that he says in terms of amenities, Swayze lacking in the SEC.
Yeah, I have to disagree with him a little bit on there. I'm not really sure what that was about. He came to the game and wasn't really in the press box for a while, but he was ranting and raving about University of Alabama's new renovations. I'm not sure what that is about, but I think that myself, along with a lot of others involved with the Ole Miss community, would put Swayze Field and Oxford University Stadium up there with just about anybody.
Yeah, I second that, too. And also, I left out Ozzie Smith on those former Cardinals. Somebody would call me out on that. Don't want to do that. Love the uniforms, and absolutely, you have to love how they started the 2016 season, they being Mike Bianco's Ole Miss Rebels, sweeping through Florida International, a Florida International team that was in the NCAA tournament last season, although they backdoored their way in there by winning the CUSA tournament as an 8 seed. They're still a tournament team. And, Dave, I know you talked with Coach Bianco following the series on Sunday. How pleased was he? What did he see that he liked? What did he see that that he dislikes? Because there's certainly a midweek game this week, but there's certainly a challenge this weekend at Swayze with the Louisville Cardinals coming to town.
I believe that question was directed towards you, Michael.
Coach Bianco definitely liked what he saw from the offense. They scored 32 runs on the weekend, and he sort of liked the situational hitting. They were really driving the runs home yesterday and taking advantage of the runners on base. On both Saturday and Sunday, they had the Rebels scored more runs than they had hits. And a lot of guys are seeing the ball really well. You see Tate Blackman hitting 600 on the year. J.V. Woodman has 6 RBI, as well as Will Golson has 5 RBI. There's a lot of guys who are seeing the ball well and hitting the ball well. Yesterday, everyone in the lineup had at least one hit, everyone that started the game anyway. And 7 of the 9 starters also reached base on an unofficial at-bat, whether it's a walk or a hit-by-pitch. And so you've seen a lot of good at-bats and a lot of guys who are seeing the ball well. And FIU is no slouch. They won more games in the postseason last year than Ole Miss did. And also you saw that the Rebels got to throw a lot of different arms. 3 different guys made their Ole Miss debut yesterday. And Brian Browning and Brady Fiegel and Connor Green. And so they were able to throw a lot of different arms and get a lot of guys some experience. And Coach Bianco was certainly pleased with his team, and he really liked what he saw of the defense, who the first 2 games committed no errors. And then on the finale, sort of some strange errors because Errol Robinson wasn't able to play. Ryan Olenek, who's been taking a lot of time at first base in the preseason, he fills in at short, makes some good plays, but then makes one error, which is understandable from a true freshman. And Sean Johnson slipped on the wet grass on a butt attempt in the first inning. And so other than that, there were no errors on the weekend. And really there were a lot of spectacular plays, 2 outfield assists, a diving play by Cameron Deshaun. And yeah, Coach Bianco was really pleased with his team going forward. And you really want to see a weekend like that when you have the number 2 team in the country come to town the next weekend.
Dave, what is the deal with the alternate uniform trend that I guess started with college football, started probably with the Oregon Ducks and all the sweet gear that Nike provided them, that has bled out through all of college football and now apparently has even reached the baseball program in Oxford. What do you think's behind the madness there? That you never know what your team's going to be wearing on any given day. And let me preface that question by saying this: I love it. I love the alternate uniforms. Sometimes they're hits, sometimes they're misses. I think Michael just alluded that he wasn't too fond of the powder blues. I love them. I think they look awesome. Carries me back to the days of my childhood when no matter what your colors were in Major League Baseball, if you weren't the Dodgers or the Yankees, you had a powder blue uniform. Michael Quirk, I know you've got a relative that played for the Kansas City Royals, Jamie Quirk, who wore those powder blues back in the 1980s. So for me, it's refreshing to see them back. But what gives, Dave? What are they trying to do? I know in football they say it's a recruiting angle. But, I mean, what do you think the deal is? Why is everybody jazzing up the wardrobe, so to speak?
Well, you know, you pointed out Oregon. I don't think Oregon, the Oregon Ducks football team, I don't think they wear the same uniform combination any given week. I think as soon as they're done after a game, those are just simply trashed and move on to the next one. But, you made a good point with the recruiting angle, you know, it being, you know, mentioned as a recruiting angle. And I think also, too, it has to do with, you know, the television broadcast and the the excitement for the fans, you know, to get the fans more intrigued with the team. Because, you know, who wants to see that the same uniforms every single week? So, and I agree with you. I love them.
New York Yankees fans, Dallas Cowboy fans, Alabama Crimson Tide fans. I mean, not everyone is doing it, mind you. Not everyone's doing it. There's something to be said about tradition. But anyway, carry on. Go ahead with your point.
Well, yeah, and Alabama, you know, too. Alabama football, the same red and white combination has been, you know, for several generations. But, you know, I like that the powder blue uniforms. It, like you said, it brings me back to the 80s. Yes, I do remember late 80s baseball. You know, some schools have tried to kind of do a uniform combination that kind of resembled, you know, the old Houston Astros look. And Yeah, I wasn't too big of a fan of that, but yeah, it really almost looked like the 1980 Cardinals out there at Swayze Field, and I loved it.
All right, Michael, we said things couldn't have gotten off to a better start for this Ole Miss baseball team. Hold your horses on going to Omaha just yet. Fourth time in the last 6 years they've gotten off to a 3-0 start. Only once out of those 6 years have they made it to Omaha. But just your impressions, is this a team that can the Ole Miss fans start drinking the Kool-Aid already on this team after this 3-0 start and sweep of Florida International? Or should they hold on maybe six more days before they make that decision?
Yeah, the everything that I saw this weekend wasn't really a there wasn't anything that caught me off guard. I knew that Coach Bianco felt really good about his bullpen and the depth there, and so seeing a lot of guys going, a lot of guys pitching well, wasn't really a surprise. And I said the lineup looked deep, and I think we saw just how deep it was with how many different guys contributed, how many different guys were getting extra base hits, guys like Ryan Olenek batting in the 8-hole getting a double, and Cameron Deshaun batting in the 9-hole getting a double, and then you have Tate Blackman hitting so well out of the 6th spot, J.B. Woodman playing so well, Errol Robinson was playing really well, and so you have, and of course the defense is unbelievably athletic. When you move a second baseman and Will Golson over to first base, and you have him playing there with Colby Boros, who plays a great third base, a lot of athleticism up the middle in Blackman and Robinson, and an outfield with unbelievable amounts of speed that we saw over the weekend, how much speed and athleticism and talent is out there. And so there is a lot to be optimistic about. The only caution I throw at the wind right now is that starting rotation. You know what you're getting out of Brady Bramlett. You saw in spurts the talent from Chad Smith and Sean Johnson, although neither really had banner weekends. Sean Johnson gave up 4 runs, 2 of them earned in 5 innings yesterday while striking out 5. He had some trouble with his command. He said that his arm feels healthy. It was just a jitters thing. And then Chad Smith just lasted 3 2/3 on Saturday. And you saw there was a little inconsistency there. Coach Bianco thought it was, you know, just getting out there. And it really could just be jitters. It was Sean Johnson only threw 1 inning last year for Ole Miss before getting this start. So he was anxious to get out there. Chad Smith tore his oblique midway through the year in junior college last year. He wanted to get back out there. So, you know, it could just be the jitters and going out and, you know, and just need to get acclimated to the season and to Swayze Field and things like that for the rotation. But there's, you know, there's sort of the pessimistic side where you think, you know, this team, all three of the weekend starters are coming off of off-season surgeries of Tommy John for Sean Johnson, a torn oblique for Chad Smith, and then removing bone spurs from the elbow from Bramlett. Well, all three look fine. You would just like to see how the rotation is going forward, the comfort there. The bullpen is great. You saw that. The defense can really play. That's not going to go away. And the lineup can hit 1 through 9. You just really want to see what you're going to get out of this starting rotation going forward before you really get on the bandwagon. And I think this weekend will go a long, long way towards telling just how good this rotation will be.
So we expect the same rotation going into the Louisville series this coming weekend. But who goes to the Hill on Wednesday? Who gets the midweek start for the Rebels against Arkansas State?
We'll be seeing freshman James MacArthur, who pitched 1 inning and gave up 1 run. And he has as high of expectations as we've seen from a freshman pitcher in a while for Ole Miss. Everyone is really high on him. He's a high-velocity guy and really has – everyone's been ranting and raving about him in the program, whether you ask them specifically about MacArthur or not. And once there's there's a few weeks with the two midweek games. When you get to those weeks, you'll see David Parkinson, the junior college transfer lefty. He will get some starts there. And if there's any hiccups, whether it's performance or injuries from that weekend staff, you'll see it'll be either Parkinson or MacArthur who will fill in a spot.
All right, not to forget about the other sport currently going on and down the stretch run. The Ole Miss men's basketball team, a 69-59 winner at Auburn on Saturday on a day where they were atrocious from the free throw line, just shot 8 of 17, hit 8 of 17 free throw attempts, but still escaped Auburn with a 10-point victory. Pushes them to 17-10 overall. Back to even Steven inside the SEC at 7-7. And Dave, moving forward, and Michael, we certainly want you to weigh in on this too, but here we go again. Hope springs eternal for the Ole Miss men's basketball program, it seems, always. They lose one, and you figure, well, it's time to write them off. Then they go on the road. Anytime you're on the road in the SEC and you can come back with a win, well, that's big time. So here we go again down the stretch, 17-10, 7-7. I'll ask both of you this. We'll start with Dave quickly. How do you see their NCAA chances from here on out? What must they do?
Well, for me, it's definitely still at this point, David, a long shot. Like you mentioned, you're going to need to see consistency out of this Ole Miss basketball team, and you have not seen that at this point in the season. So they've got four remaining games on the regular schedule remaining. They'll go back home midweek for a Missouri game, and then they travel to Georgia over the weekend in Athens, which you mentioned the road test. That's going to be a tough test for them. And then they come back home for Mississippi State, and then end the season on the road at Tennessee. So they're going to have to finish strong heading into the SEC tournament. And if they can finish strong, maybe, just maybe, they can get out into that bubble, which they're currently not in right now.
Michael?
I have to agree with Dave on, you know, it is a long shot at this point. But it is still a possibility. Ole Miss sits at 7-7 in conference. They have four very winnable games left, with Missouri coming to town tomorrow, who has yet to win a game this season away from Columbia. They're 0-12 on neutral site and true away games this year. And, they come to, the Pavilion tomorrow. And then you travel to Georgia on Saturday for hosting the home finale senior night against Mississippi State next week. And then, of course, going up to Rocky Top on next Saturday. And so there really aren't any opportunities for marquee wins, none, in fact. But if Ole Miss can win all four of those games and get to 21 wins, then that will, of course, look a little better, although their RPI, which is already not great, will take a hit. And even if they win all four games, they're going to need to make some progress in Nashville in a few weeks. And personally, I think that they'll have to, if they win out in the regular season, they'll have to make it to Sunday in Nashville to feel any sort of comfort in their status going into the NCAA tournament field. If they slip up down the stretch here, they'll probably have to take home the trophy like in 2013 when old Marshall did it. I know I sound like a broken record here, but the bubble's incredibly weak, so it doesn't seem like anyone's really out of it. Right now, Alabama's in the field, and Vanderbilt's they're wavering in and out of the field right now. And even Georgia. I've seen a lot of folks are still putting Georgia alive. And so it's really anything's possible at this time, but Ole Miss will have to get hot. They'll need to play better basketball than they have lately, where you see, even though they've been playing sort of 500 basketball the last few weeks. You really need to be shooting better with Stephon Moody, who's been struggling.
Well,
Rasheed Brooks has been struggling.
Let's look at it like this. Say they do win their last four regular season games. Missouri, Georgia, Mississippi State, and Tennessee. Puts them at 21-10 and 11-7 going into the SEC tournament. And at 11-7 in the league, guys, you're probably looking at being a 5 seed, maybe even a 4, depending on how things finish out. Michael, would you say that's a fair assessment? 11-7 probably puts you in that 4th or 5th seed?
Yeah, probably about that. And if you're Ole Miss, you're sort of looking at your seeding in the SEC tournament of, you know, what exactly do we want here? Do we want less resistance in our way toward trying to make a run at Sunday, or do we need an extra win, but not an extra 2 wins, because if Ole Miss finishes where they would need to win 5 games to win it all, that's not exactly an enviable position. But do you need that extra win in Nashville to really solidify your spot, or do you want the least amount of resistance and just play 3 games and try and get there? So
yeah, that's
a double-edged sword there.
My question would be, if they roll in at 21-10, 11-7 in the SEC, and let's just say the number 4 seed in the SEC tournament, and they win a game, and they're 2-10, and then they go home. Well, 22-11, could 22-11 get them into the NCAA tournament? I would think they would be squarely on the bubble if they can win the next 4 and just win one tournament game, one conference tourney game. And obviously, if they got to Sunday, I think that would certainly solidify them in there. But I guess as we said, hope springs eternal. And Lord knows if they beat Missouri and move to 18-10 and lose to Georgia, and they're 18-11, and they come back and win those next 2 and finish 20-11, we'll be at the same point in this conversation. You know, there's still a chance, but they're going to have to go to Nashville, and they're going to have to play well. What we do know is that, man, there's no room for error, is there? I mean, they certainly could not any slippage between now and the SEC tournament, the only way they're getting in is to be cutting the nets down on that Sunday in Nashville. I think we're all in agreement on that. Is that right?
I agree.
Yeah, so that's what we're looking at. So playoff basketball has essentially started for this Ole Miss Rebels crew. And, you know, if not the big dance, then the pavilion's going to be the grandest stage in the nation for some NIT games. I think you're pretty sure about that. But we'll see what happens. A Tuesday night game for Ole Miss this week, an 8 o'clock Central Time tip-off, thanks to television. But basketball only a couple hours long, so that's not too taxing on your midweek schedule. As Missouri, who I think Michael pointed out has not won a game on the road this year, will be in Oxford. Get out and see those Rebels. They certainly need all the help they can get running down the stretch. And then you always go what might have been had the rash of injuries not showed up in the middle of the year, that they, you know, possibly instead of being 17-10 right now, maybe they're a 19-8 club, and maybe they're 9-7 in league play. You know, maybe they win that one down in Starkville that was such a hurtful loss in terms of RPI that they lost earlier this year. And that's always a fun game, especially when it's in Oxford, and, you know, revenge will be on the minds of not only the Ole Miss faithful, but the Ole Miss basketball team as the Bulldogs come to town next week to play in the pavilion for the first time ever. So that's what's going on the hardwood and on the diamond. Of course, football recruiting never, ever, ever stops. And a big-time visitor in Oxford on Friday, in 2017, Calabasas, California, quarterback Tristan Gebbia. He is the son of former Ole Miss tight end Rich Gebbia. And for those of you who aren't as old as I am, Rich played tight end at Ole Miss back in the late 1980s. Now his son is one of the most coveted quarterback prospects in the country in this 2017 class. And after visiting West Virginia on Friday, Ole Miss got the sandwich visit. Actually visited West Virginia on Wednesday. Ole Miss got the sandwich visit on Friday, and he capped things off by visiting Utah over the weekend, did Tristan Gebbia. And our very own Dave Bevan caught up with Tristan last night and kind of shared some of his thoughts on the Ole Miss visit. So, Dave, what can you enlighten us with on this very important prospect in the 2017 Ole Miss class?
Well, after talking with Tristan, you know, he opened things up with how busy of a week it was. And as you mentioned, David, he visited West Virginia on Wednesday, Ole Miss on Friday, and then wrapped the visit up with Utah. It was a total of 7 plane flights in 5 days for the young man. So a very busy week. In his Ole Miss visit on Friday, he told me that he really enjoyed it. He loved the small town vibe, but he also noted that it was big enough to, have enjoyable entertainment surrounding him. And he loved the atmosphere and seeing that it was a really good place to play football. One thing that he also noted to me, that it had been over 25 years since both his parents had been back to Ole Miss. His father, as you mentioned, Rich, played for the Rebels in the late 80s. His mother was also a student at Ole Miss. And he also mentioned that they enjoyed the visit as well, and reminiscing the good old days as their time there. They noticed the renovations that are currently going on at Ole Miss. Of course, the Vault Hemingway Stadium is currently being torn down with the laying out the new grass and the bowling of the stadium, and new buildings across the campus that they weren't familiar with back in those days. Now that they got on campus, they seeing a lot of new buildings. As far as coaches, he bonded a lot with Coach Dan Warner, got to sit down with Coach Hugh Freeze a couple of times, and Coach Tommy Luke and Coach Will Banks, he had really good conversations with those schools. Before his visit, he put Ole Miss in his top 5, including Washington State, Nebraska, and West Virginia. He told me after taking his trip to Utah, you know, Utah offered him after he released his top 5. So, you know, he is reconsidering Utah. Now he's going to go back home and just weigh out his options. He told me that, you know, the April decision is still a possibility. So, you know, as you mentioned, David, this was a very important visit for Ole Miss, because it was probably going to be the only opportunity that Ole Miss would have Gebbia on campus before he made his decision. So, you know, for him to have that visit in, I think it will make his decision a lot easier now visiting, you know, these schools that he hasn't had a chance to visit in the past.
All right, Dave, did you get the sense that that Gebbia was here to really try to engage, soak in what this Ole Miss football program is all about? Also, did you get the sense that the fact that his parents are alums, is that going to matter to him? Or did you get the sense that this is a young man who has a family history of playing at Ole Miss? The Rebels offered, so they gave Ole Miss a cup of coffee. Where do you stand on that with Gebbia right now?
I think Ole Miss is in a really good position with Gebbia right now. You know, he mentioned that with talking to the coaches, he told me that, you know, hey, they
Dave, did we lose you? Michael?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I'm still here. Apparently, we've lost Dave.
That's never a good thing.
Never a good thing. Dave is lost. That's okay though. I guess Michael and I will continue on. But and Dave will let us know when he gets back on the studio line here. But Tristan Gebbia, and the reason I think that this young man is so big of a potential piece to this 2017 class, Michael, is that I'm not sure how many top 2017 quarterbacks are going to be eager to come to Ole Miss and stand in line, perceivably stand in line, behind Shea Patterson and Jason Pellerin and wait for their playing time. So, you know, I think Ole Miss might have struck a vein of gold to find a young man in which they've got perhaps an inside lane to that is one of the nation's top 2017 quarterbacks. And I think that's why this visit is so important.
It's not like when you're looking at a receiver who's coming into a crowded situation or an offensive lineman. There's only one that's going to play. There's not going to be a rotation going in and out of the ballgame. And so you sort of see down the road of.
Hey guys, I'm back on. Sorry, I disconnected.
Sorry, Jay. You really need to quit drinking or. Don't start drinking this early in the morning.
I second that.
As I'm in mid-sentence, it disconnected me. I apologize for that.
That's okay. That's okay. We were continuing the discussion on trusting Gabbia, and I think Michael's just made a valid point. It's not like you're recruiting this position where there's pool play, where you're going to be in a rotation or anything. I mean, you know, you're a quarterback. And, yeah, I know two quarterback systems have been successful at times, but you better have a quarterback. You know, the old saying, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a quarterback. Or if you have three quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. I'm kind of a believer in that. Very rarely have you seen a two-quarterback system work. I guess you could go back to the 1990 Ole Miss Rebels and Russ Shouse and Tommy Luke. That one worked pretty darn well. You know, Bo Wallace, Barry Brunetti in Freeze's first couple of years, I guess. I mean, I don't know that it was overly effective, and I don't know that one did anything the other couldn't have done, to be quite honest with you. So I don't know about that. Freeze will play two quarterbacks, he'll tell you. He's not afraid to. He's showing us that. But the point being, how many 2017 quarterbacks out there have such an affinity for Ole Miss that they're going, you know what, I'll set for a year or two before I get my first real shot of getting on the field, because I know that they have Shea Patterson. And we're not even talking Chad Kelly, because he'll be gone after this fall, but they'll have Shea Patterson. And then they've got this guy named Jason Pellerin, whom I'm telling you, guys, I don't know what's going to happen here, but everybody is too quick to write Jason Pellerin off as a quarterback. And let me tell you something. I'm hearing he's got a little chip on his shoulder about it, too, about proving people that, hey, I can play quarterback. And look, I covered this kid's recruitment for a good long while, got to know him pretty good. Let me tell you a couple of things about Jason Pellerin. He's accountable to himself and others. He is one of the most humble young men you will ever talk to. He's one of the most intelligent recruits that I have ever covered. He's hungry. And you can just hear that oozing from him when you talk to him. He's hungry. And I'm telling you, you better. He's one hell of an athlete. He's 6'4", 235 pounds. He can run. He can throw. He's fixing his so-called accuracy problems. And everybody's like, when are they going to move Pellerin to outside linebacker? When are they going to move Pellerin to tight end? I'm not on that train, guys. I'm just not on that train. Y'all might disagree with me, but I think Jason Pellerin ends up being a factor at quarterback before his career at Ole Miss is over.
I agree. And what I was going to say was before I dropped out of the call, David, about going back to Gabbia, you'd asked me, you know, how much is Ole Miss really in it for Gabbia and you know, his parents factor into the decision. You know, he mentioned how, you know, how it really excited him to see his parents, you know, enjoying getting back to Ole Miss. So I think, you know, that there is, I think that has a lot to do with the reason Ole Miss is in it from his standpoint.
Dave, the thing you told me, though, earlier that made me ask you that question, was that you mm-hmm. said it's the first time they have been back in 25 years. First time mm-hmm. the parents have been back in 25 years. So I question, I mean, lots can change in 25 years. I mean, I had a really beautiful girlfriend 25 years ago. and if I saw her today, I don't love her. I wouldn't leave my wife for her. You know, I mean, I don't know.
You know,
maybe that's a bad analogy. I don't know what I just stepped into there, but
they haven't been back to Ole Miss in 25 years. But I don't think the love for Ole Miss had never lost because in my first ever conversation with Tristan, you know, he told me about his dad's stories. You know, while growing up, his dad's stories that while he was at Ole Miss, the famous catch that his dad caught. And Tristan followed Ole Miss throughout the years, as he told me. You know, he remembers all the way back to the Houston Nutt era. I know a lot of Ole Miss fans would like to erase some of that time, but you know, Tristan has followed Ole Miss throughout his childhood and into his high school years. So I don't think the passion for Ole Miss, you know, ever was lost. You know, being with his parents. But as far as the coaching staff, you know, they told him how, you know, they were excited about him, how much they wanted him to be a Rebel, and he said that excites him. So, you know, like I said, the next step through the process for him is now going back home and weighing out his decisions.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. And, again, he has said already that possibly – an April decision for him. Maybe that's still on the table. My gut is, you know, quarterbacks like to decide early, but as more offers keep pouring in for Tristan Gebbia, I would think it may extend his process just a little bit longer as he gets a feel for the other schools, such as Utah, who has recently offered, as to what he wants to do. But I think he's a very important piece. By the way, Ole Miss, don't be surprised to see them take two quarterbacks in this class. It's just a numbers thing that makes perfect sense. When Chad Kelly leaves following this fall, Ole Miss will be down to two scholarship quarterbacks on their roster in Shea Patterson and Jason Pellerin. That's not a good thing, folks. So in addition to bringing in a high school quarterback in the 17 class, do not be surprised to see Ole Miss go after a JUCO quarterback in this 2017 class, and they're going to go after the best JUCO quarterback that they can possibly find. So that, you know, I guess the goal is to keep that quarterback situation as crowded as it can possibly be, but do not be surprised to see the Rebels take two quarterbacks, one high school, one JUCO guy in this 2017 class. Okay, time for closing thoughts now. We'll go with Michael Quirk first, who gave us an excellent report on the Diamond Rebels and AK's Basketball Rebels as they are struggling to stay alive in the hunt to reach that big dance, which will be coming up with the changing into March here very, very shortly. Michael, your closing thoughts on the day.
Yeah, I'm gonna need a Gator or some type of all terrain vehicle on Tuesday, as Ole Miss plays at 4 o'clock at Swayze Field, and then a quick turnaround to an 8 o'clock game over at the Pavilion. So if anyone has, you know, an 8-wheel Gator or, you know, maybe a small midsize, I'm not asking for much, helicopter, something of the sort that can transport me from Swayze over to the Pavilion on Tuesday, that would be just excellent.
See, that's what's wrong with the youth of this generation, y'all. Now, the baseball field and the Pavilion, what is it, quarter mile? Quarter mile from one another, Michael?
No, it's at least 10 miles when you factor in how lazy I am.
Gotcha. Michael sealing the burn right now. No, I'm just kidding.
How dare you.
So, Bernie, we didn't talk about that, but Hillary takes care of Bernie out in Nevada over the weekend, and Trump blitzes through South Carolina, and now, you know, I I'm a spectator in this, okay? I'm not throwing an endorsement out, but it is hilarious to me to watch, and here we go, talking about politics, to watch the Republican establishment media tread water on Donald Trump. They've done everything from, cut his ears off to blaming him for Rosie O'Donnell's weight problem, and now they're coming to the realization that Donald Trump is likely going to be the Republican nominee for president of the United States of America. And after they have spent
the better part of the last 8 months trying to derail, defunct Donald Trump as much as they can. It's kind of funny to turn it on Fox News, which I watch more than any other news channel, and see them kind of jaws dropped. Megyn Kelly in particular, if any of you watch the Kelly file, really has not hidden her disdain for Donald Trump, nor has he hidden his for her. But it's kind of hilarious Saturday night to see her reaction and all these other talking heads' reaction when Trump just blitzed through South Carolina, Jeb Bush drops out of the race, and all of a sudden Donald Trump is a real thing. It's kind of like the rebels march to the Sugar Bowl. No one would have thought it. And then all of a sudden it's like, what? Ole Miss is going to get in the Sugar Bowl. That's kind of how it's been. I'll toss it back to you for commentary, Michael.
Well, Ole Miss was never going to get impeached from the Sugar Bowl. I think it's pretty fair to say that Donald Trump will get impeached before his first term is over.
Well, he may get impeached, but Hillary Clinton's not running for president of the United States. She's running for her freedom, because if she doesn't win, she's probably going to the pokey. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's we may have our first ever remote Ole Miss 247 staff writer if it's a Clinton versus Trump presidential race, because neither is deserving of president. Neither would do a good job. And hearing both of them speak, just it gets me closer and closer to having an ulcer. So if one of them is going to become president, I may be covering the Diamond Rebs from somewhere in the Caribbean, or maybe from up in Toronto or somewhere, because I'm going to need to get out of here before everything just goes to hell.
I think you may be too late, my friend. You may be too late. All right, Dave. Closing thoughts. As Michael needs an escort from Brooklyn Swayze to the pavilion, and he's not a fan of Hillary nor Donald Trump, and we'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. You know, I did follow some of the political campaigns over the weekend, like y'all mentioned, with Trump winning South Carolina and Jeb Bush falling out of the race. But, you know, it's other than that, it was a really good weekend. David, I know you enjoyed a little time off, and it was a privilege for Michael and I to take over the site and let you enjoy a little time off. And, you know, other than that, you know, it was a great Sunday night for my TV shows, and I talked with some of the subscribers about the Walking Dead last night on the thread. So it was a great weekend. So I couldn't complain about it at all.
Okay. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't address these little nuggets of happiness I've been dropping since last night about should be good news rolling in today for Ole Miss regarding its 2017 football recruiting class. I've got to leave it at that. And I know, you know, you put something up like that and you want to tell people everything that you possibly know as soon as you can tell it. But at the same time, it's a respect your sources situation. It's a not wanting to steal the thunder from a young man situation. So we're not going to name names. But I do expect a 2017 commitment to Ole Miss, possibly and probably as early as today. So you can let your imagination run wild right there, but don't be surprised when it comes down the pipe. Well, guys, it's been fun. It's been it's a good way to start off a Monday, a little bit of jovial back and forth with a lot of good information mixed in right there. And as always, we thank our community of family on Rebels 247 for putting up with us and listening to us through the good, the bad, the right, and the wrong. We always appreciate you, and if we can ever do anything for you, if you feel the need to reach out, you can always send a direct message to myself, to Dave, or Michael. If there's something you need to talk about that's not board appropriate or anything like that. And of course, you post your thoughts, questions on the board, we'll get back to you as soon as we possibly can. Really, as soon as we see it, we'll get back to you. So, but as always, thank you so much for allowing us to be a small part of your day. We don't take that obligation, we don't take that opportunity lightly, and we certainly appreciate it. So we'll sign off now for Dave Bevan and Michael Quirk. I'm David Johnson. All of us for 247 Sports, thank you for listening, and hotty toddy.